The Lima Coast to Coast, number 15, November 6, 2005. Thou will should be the whole of the law. Welcome to Thelema Coast to Coast, the podcast dedicated to the exploration of Thelema, Aleister Crowley, ceremonial magic, and the new eon. My name is John Crow, and I'm the host of the show. Today's show is a 50-minute interview with well-known author Lon Milo Duquette. However, before we get into that, I want to make a few comments and thank a few people. First of all, I want to thank a number of the listeners who have written in and sent postcards, including Sylvia from Las Vegas, Reverend Kurtz, Tiffin, Ryan, David, James, Freighter Uranus, and many others. I also want to say thank you to those who have called and left messages. The first one is Elisade from San Jose, California.
Hi, this is Elisade, based in San Jose, and I just heard on the podcast that you wanted people to call your comment line, so I thought I would call and say that I very much enjoy Thelema Coast to Coast. Although I'm not a Thelemite, I am interested in magic and the occult, and I find it extremely informative. So thanks very much, and please keep podcasting.
Also, I've mentioned Scarlet Woman Lodge's newsletter, The Scarlet Letter, a number of times. One of the members, David Hill, called and left a message talking about the Scarlet Letter and how anybody interested in getting a copy can go and subscribe or look at the older issues that are online. Here's his message.
93, John. This is David Hill calling from Austin, Texas. You mentioned the Scarlet Letter a couple times on your podcast, and I'd like to take a moment to tell your listeners a bit about it. The Scarlet Letter is a quarterly publication of Scarlet Woman Lodge. We've been putting the letter out since 1993. It has original ritual, artwork, editorials, and scholarly work, among other things. The Scarlet Letter represents the history of our lodge and the work that we've done over the years. We sell subscriptions to the letter for $16.95 a year, and I'd like to invite your listeners to check out our webpage at scarletwoman.org. We have the first 7 volumes of the letter freely available online, and we also have an article index that's current up to the most recent issue. So if you're interested in reading some original Thelemic work, please stop by and check it out. Thanks, and 93.
I also want to give a thanks to the folks at Loshtal.com. Right after I put out the last podcast, Wilma hit the data center in Florida. And the folks at Loshtal.com were very helpful in getting the program back up and running. So thank you very much to those guys. And also on the Thelema Coast to Coast website, things have been picking up. There's over 230 users registered. We now have 13 countries in the post about where Thelema Coast to Coast listeners are at. We've just added Mexico, Israel, and Thailand. So please take a few moments and go to the list and see if your country's on there. And if it's not, reply on the forum and we'll get your country's flag added. After today's interview, which is 50 minutes long, we'll be closing with the song called Liber All Demo by the group Green Man, and they are in, I think it is Italy. I want to say thank you to listener Doug, who sent the link to their music and made me aware of it. As I've said before, there are 4 different ways in getting in touch with me. You can email directly at podcast@thelemacoasttocoast.com. You can go to the Thelema Coast to Coast website, www.thelemacoasttocoast.com. You can call the Thelema Coast to Coast voicemail, 206-20-AGAPE or 206-202-4273. Or you can write at Thelema Coast to Coast, care of John Crow, P.O. Box 7045, Marietta, Georgia, That's Marietta, Georgia, GA, 30065 in the USA. I want to also say thank you very much to the number of people who have sent postcards. They are all scanned and up on the website, so you can see the diverse postcards, everything from a picture of a geisha girl to Salvador Dali to Dada art to hand-drawn art of Crowley, all kinds of various postcards. So take a few moments and go look at those. And also, the stickers have been mailed out to all of the people who have sent postcards, but I have plenty more. So send a postcard in and get it up on the website and get some stickers sent back. Anyway, let's get into the interview with Lon Milo Duquette. He's going to be talking about Enochian, Goetic Magic, and also some of the books that he's written. So here's Lon.
We have on the program with us Lon Milo Duquette. Are you there, Lon?
I am here, John.
Welcome to Thelema Coast to Coast. Thanks for being on the show.
Well, thanks for calling.
One of the things my listeners have been asking for is discussions of very practical, hands-on magic. And you immediately came to mind with your vast experience and number of books about these subjects. And so I wanted to take some time and talk about Enochian and Goetic work with you. One of the first things that I want to ask is, why would a ceremonial magician want to do Enochian or Goetic workings within their magical path?
Well, that would have to be a totally personal decision. You know, why be a ceremonial magician rather than a monk or another kind of religious devotee? There is as many reasons for doing it as there are magicians to do it. If the magician doesn't particularly know why he or she is interested in performing Enochian or Goetic magic, at least they should ask themselves, why am I attracted to this particular form of magic? It's easy to say that you shouldn't do magic as an experiment, but you know that all of us, especially at the beginning, do lots of our magic as an experiential or experimental operation. But truly, you should have an object to your operation before you do anything, even if that object is your own personal growth, your own personal alchemy. By doing this, by exploring this, by experimenting with this, I am turning myself into another person. I'm doing this to change myself. Really early on in somebody's magical career, though, you're not thinking about that. You're thinking about, boy, I would really like to, if I conform to this formula of Goetic evocation, will I see a spirit? Can I get that spirit to go next door and make the girl fall in love with me, or bewitch my neighbor's cow, or get that job, or get that? So there's a sense of actually having an object to your operation. But if your main overriding object isn't your own spiritual growth, your own spiritual illumination, then we're putting all of this on the level of just an experiment, a psychic experiment. And in my way of looking at things, that isn't high magic per se. Am I making any sense?
Absolutely. Assuming one wants to perform some Enochian, there is a lot of technical equipment necessary, including the tablets, the table, the sigils, shoe stones, and so forth. Is all of that necessary for somebody to start working with an Enochian system, or can they just start with themselves and start working their way up? What level of paraphernalia are necessary for effective Enochian workings?
Well, that's a great question. First of all, you've only truly got yourself to work with, and all of the equipment and the toys and such are truly devices to focus yourself on. In the final analysis, you don't need any of it. The tablets are just wood and paint. The table's just wood, and the talismans are just tin, and all of the equipment and the toys are just things to focus the magician. It's the magician doing the magic, and not the and not the toys, but the equipment and building the equipment and designing it and understanding where it came from and how it distilled from this massive, massive amount of information that Dean Kelly got at first. As the magician begins to understand why the holy table is the way it is, why those letters are around the holy table, what those letters in the middle of the table mean, how the table is supposed to, you know, connect heaven and earth, and how this elaborate lamin, which is a version of the table that the magician wears over his or her heart, how that lamin connects the magician to the table, how the table connects everything to, you know, quote, heaven and earth. And in a way, the equipment is vitally important, not for what it is, but for what the magician has to do and understand to create the equipment. And the tablets and such, it's nice. I've got a beautiful set of, you know, truncated pyramid elemental tablets and Tablet of Union and such, but honestly, they're just there to sort of physically dominate the room with something that is non-physical. You could technically work just as well with creating all this stuff on paper or creating it on your computer and printing it out. You know, it's not the physical equipment per se, but the magician's understanding of what the equipment is symbolizes. What it actually means, but even more importantly, what changes have occurred in the magician while making that equipment. So in other words, you're a different person when you start to make the equipment. Making the equipment itself is turning you into a magician that is attuned to this kind of magic. So it's almost something that you don't perceive that's happening, you know, because you're so close to yourself, you can't see when you're changing. But that's the magic. That's the magic to change you. So by the time you're ready to actually perform elemental magic or what I think is most important, the etheric part of the system, by the time you're ready to actually do that, you become a person that can do that. Okay, so let's say I've got a couple thousand bucks worth of Enochian furniture. Somebody just can't lift that furniture, take it off someplace else, and think that furniture is imbued with any particular spiritual or magical virtues. It takes a magician to work it,
right.
And the equipment kind of builds the magician.
Let's say somebody wants to do some Enochian working. There's a variety of different Enochian operations, including scrying the heirs, invoking the governors, the watchtowers. How does someone determine what's the best ritual to do for their particular operation?
Well, again, it's completely dependent upon the magician's own understanding of the system and what they would like to have occur in their life. The Golden Dawn, Crowley, Lieber Hanok method of viewing the elemental tablets, and we've got these four tablets that are attributed to fire, water, air, and earth, and the Tablet of Union, the spirit tablet that unites and rules them. And then each of those tablets, in turn, are broken up into four sub-quadrants or sub-angles of fire, water, air, and earth. We're really used to we're comfortable with thinking of these tablets and such in this elemental way. After all, MacGregor Mathers and the boys organized it that way. They must have had an incredible amount of time on their hands, but they took material from that they had at their disposal of Dean Kelly, and they created that. And I'm not trying to take away from the genius of Mathers and the Golden Dawn people, but those tablets were not attributed as fire, water, air, and earth, or even spirit, in the original Dean Kelly material. there is something far, far more generic, more universal at work there. The tablets were just just letters. They weren't attributed to the elemental watchtowers, if you will. So there's so much more potential behind that that the Golden Dawn just sort of snagged. Well, we can conveniently break this stuff up into tablet 156 squares. Well, we can make it 13 by 12, and we can give a double column down the center and then a row down the middle, and that makes 36. And oh, there's 36 decans. Oh, that's just perfect. And then they were the ones that split those things up into this same sort of elemental idea as we find in the tarot. You know, the four aces being the four elemental tablets, and the 16 court cards being the sub-elemental mix inside those four. So if a magician's understanding is such that he really knows what those elemental mixes are in his or her life, fire of water, what that means to them in their emotional life or such, then they can actually use those calls to activate that part of the elemental tablet where they need clarification, they need inspiration, they need a good idea. It's been my experience that Enochian spirits or angels or whatever we want to call them aren't really suitable for sending out and doing errands for you. I've never had any even response to trying to send say a cherub, mm-hmm. you know, that elemental angel above the arms of the Calvary crosses and the subangles. I've never had any success in saying please go out and make sure that I get this check that I've earned, you know.
That's more of a goetic thing than an Enochian?
That's more of a goetic thing, absolutely. But what the Enochian spirits, I sort of view as them being the cosmos as it is. And each little quadrant and subangle and subdivision and subdivision of subdivision is just an increasingly focused window on that particular part of the cosmos as it is. And the practicality from elemental working doesn't come from having a spirit go do something for you. It comes from you getting a vision that makes you wiser so that you know what to do to get what you want accomplished. It's almost an educational form of magic rather than a mechanical. And it's the subtlety of that, I know, is, you know, it's not always easy to communicate. But let's say you do, you've got, say, a problem, an emotional problem or something that you really would like to further clarification on. You'd really like to rebalance yourself. And it appears to you, with your understanding of the elements and your understanding of the elemental mixes and such, that a particular subangle of one of these elemental tablets really represents the area you would like some information on, you would like some wisdom on, you would like yourself to be more attuned with. Let's say you're a very gross person and you don't understand the subtleties, the emotional or intellectual subtleties of a particular problem you may be faced with, and it just seems like, boy, if I just had an extra shot of air, mm-hmm. fire of air, you know, I really want, I'm passionate to understand something. You truly make contact with part of yourself that you've never that you've ignored, that you've disowned before, and the vision, and they usually come not like an angel saying, well, here's what you got to do, John. You got to, you get a vision, you get a vignette, you get a strange little story of some kind, because that's about the only way these things can communicate with you. And in that story, in that play or that vision that you see, you can literally interact and make yourself part, a character in that play itself. And in that vision, in that maybe 10-minute experience where you've, by using the call and such, you've created a magical environment where that stuff is happening, and you make yourself part of it for that brief period. And of course you write it down in your diary, including all the strange things and the worms with fur coats, you know, eating pizza, and yes, you put all of that down, and make that an integral part of your greater magical operation, which is to get done what you've just got to get done.
When working with the calls, I noticed that the Golden Dawn and Crowley took the calls and did a modification where they added vowel sounds based on a particular formula from Hebrew and so forth. And in your book that accompanies your tarot deck, you take all of those vowel sounds out. What was your justification for that, or your rationale behind that?
Well, it wasn't that I took any vowel sounds out. It's that the Golden Dawn put vowel sounds in.
Right.
So if you turn to the source material, which even the True and Faithful Relation book can give you a pretty good idea, although it's filled with inaccuracies and typos too. We're really lucky now that we can download, you know, Crowley and Kelly's, not Crowley, but Dee and Kelly's handwritten versions of these things. But it's very clear that in the original source D material, that the angels wanted it more or less pronounced the way it's written. And in a couple instances, Dee tried to use the word Zed or Zod to you know, sound out the letter Z, and the angel stopped and corrected him. He said, "No, don't be zodding us here," you know. And so it's pretty clear to anybody who even spends a little time with the source material that the angels were pretty clear about pronouncing it, or trying to pronounce it, about as straightforward as you see it originally spelled. Granted, it's choppy. It's sometimes there's four or five consonants in a row, you
right.
know, that you have to wade through. And but you know, if you've ever met anybody at a comic book or a sci-fi convention that just goes around speaking Klingon all the time, Klingon is harder than regular Enochian. So, and there's lots of people that speak Klingon nowadays. But that being said, one call, one version, one pronunciation method works just as good as another, as far as I have been able to determine through experience. I learned the first and second calls the sort of Golden Dawn Crowley way, where you stick, you know, old Sanu Favrasaji Gohuyad Balata.
Right.
Okay. Balata. And the word is just ball.
Mm-hmm.
And Zodame Zoda. Okay. The word is just Zims.
Right.
It's just Zims. How many Zods do you stick in a Zodame Zod? Zod, 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 Zod. But it really doesn't matter. If you enjoy the sort of Italian lilt that you get with the Golden Dawn method, it's really no different than listening to an opera that say you don't speak Italian and you hear somebody singing terrible Italian, in an opera, it doesn't matter to you. You know,
right.
the song is there. You love it. I think that the Enochian intelligences, or that part of you that is the Enochian intelligence, they're sort of like Frenchmen. They appreciate any attempt to speak their language. You know, the worst delivery of an Enochian call in a formal magical setting that I've ever experienced created the most powerful and colorful and detailed vision that I had ever seen up to that point. After we got started with doing Enochian classes once a week at classes many years ago, we had a wonderful experience kind of that I talk about in a couple books. But we started doing the classes two nights a week for 3 years. And in that time, we sort of systematically went through everything, gave everybody a chance to sit in the driver's seat and scry, and gave everybody a chance to do the calls and such. It was a workshop. The magic of our Enochian workings was to learn, mm-hmm. You know. So we weren't trying to set out to change the world or stop a war or change the weather or give Pat Robertson hives or anything. So. there was one individual who was always anxious to do the calls, and the dear man, we knew it was going to be awful. We waited and postponed his night of doing the call as long as we possibly could. And finally the night came when we just had no more excuses. He was going to have to do the call that night. And we did our preliminary ooga boogas and such, and set up things, and it was time for him to do the call. And we turned the lights out and lit our candles and put our crystal up on our tablet, and away we went. And we were right. He was just awful. Just all sans and oof, very trivial, sadgy. And we were all, you know, some of us are sitting in chairs and some of us are, you know, on the floor, whatever our visionary positions are. And we're all just sort of going, and you know how hard it is when you were a kid and you started to laugh in church and everything just became mm-hmm. funnier, you know. And by the, we were just almost exploding, trying not to just laugh out loud at what we were hearing. And then slowly, we just started to get quieter and quieter, and he kept going on with this horribly butchered call. And by the time he was through, we were all flat on our backs, just going, wow. I mean, it was a powerful, powerful technicolor, you know, moment. And so I kind of figured right then and there, it's not the pronunciation of the call or anything else, but it's your intent and your ability to at least hit landmark sounds. These are like songs. They're less like evocations or conjurations. They're like songs. And it's like these guys' favorite song. And I sort of like to think of it like we sing the favorite song of Air of Air, okay? And the Air of Air guys, the levels, the frequencies of consciousness, or whatever you want to call these spirits, the Air of Air guys resonate, and they go, oh, somebody's singing our song. That's our school song,
right.
You know? And they come. And as they come, they bring their world with them. They bring their vibratory frequency with them, just so they can hear the song, whether the song's lousy or not. They recognize basically the melody and the meter, and they're really compelled by a sympathetic ear to come to your house and listen, you know, and when they do so, they drag their whole magical environment with them, and it's in that magical environment that you have the vision.
When somebody is working with the keys, what way have you found that is best to determine which keys to use at which particular times? What system do you use to determine that?
No one system. Sometimes, if there is a particular goal in mind for the operation that night, we do a divination. We do a tarot divination. Really leave it to the caprice of the random gods and flat out use tarot cards. With the elemental system, of course, we use the aces, 16 court cards.
Mm-hmm.
And at first, we did that. Well, I did that first because I'm just a lazy guy. I mean, I would just, instead of trying to outguess the elemental world, I'll just say, hey, I got this problem. What do I need for this problem? Shuffle, shuffle, shuffle. Well, there it is, Earth of Fire. And even though I did that at first being lazy, as I went on and more or less saw that the original Dean Kelly material did not indicate in any way which ones of these tablets were air, fire, earth, or water, or anything, that there was no particular elemental attribution to the four tablets, I was even more inclined to go for the caprice of a divination prior to doing an Enochian call. Because if I thought my problem was a fire of water problem, and in reality, in the Enochian system, you know, fire of water isn't where we think it is.
Right.
You know, why should I go off in the wrong direction? If I trust my divinatory abilities, I'll let that be my guide at first. But of course, there's all sorts of ways that you can choose especially a sub-angle or a planetary senior. If your problem is martial in nature, you go for a Mars senior. And the Mars senior is, and if your problem is material, it'd be the Mars senior of Earth. If your problem is intellectual or you know, concerning a quarrel or something, then you go to the Mars senior of Air. You just use your just knee-jerk, hermetic, anal retentive, you know, skills to zero down on one, and that is probably how most practicing ceremonial magicians would start. Okay, I need help. I need a soldier. I need a martial, Enochian guy to go into that job interview with me tomorrow. You know, I need a guy with a sword that can just cut right through that. Well, it's an intellectual thing here. Yeah, I want him to stand by me and show that I'm witty. Okay, I'm going to do the Mars Senior of the Air Tablet.
What books do you recommend to people to get a better understanding of Enochian?
You know, that goofy little book, it's not a goofy little book, it's a good little book. That the first thing that Chris Hyatt and I did together.
Mm-hmm.
Really what it is, it's called Enochian World of Aleister Crowley, and the subtitle is Enochian Sex Magic. Well, the reason that it's probably still in print is because of the subtitle Enochian Sex Magic. Because you got to admit, this is a pretty small market and a pretty focused group. But what the Enochian World of Aleister Crowley is an extended commentary on Crowley's Liber Enoch from the equinox. Now, it appears at first glance that its Enoch is kind of fragmentary and not complete. But what it really is Crowley being extremely economical with his words and his language, and he really does put in the magician's lap a workable system, just in Liber Enoch. If you would understand it. And all I did was sort of dilate a couple of very economically crafted sections from Hanok and kind of put it in perspective. I've had very few people after reading that really complain that there wasn't enough to get them started.
Okay.
At least. As much as I want anybody that goes through the hell and the time and the expense and the frustration to write a book, I think anybody that goes through that deserves to have their books bought, you know.
Right.
And buy them, you know. You don't have to read them, but buy them. This guy's gone through hell to get this book. So I hate to, you know, cast negative aspersions on another magician or another writer's works, but some are more helpful than others.
Now, what about the source material? Like you mentioned, the True and Faithful Revelation, and there's a few other source material books. Do you recommend those also?
Absolutely, absolutely. But I sort of recommend them to folks that have already more or less have a good idea and a good grasp of the preliminary material as outlined in the Golden Dawn and Liber Hanok. The Golden Dawn material that you find in the various Golden Dawn books really give you a good grounding in what modern magicians, by modern I mean from 1875, you know, to now, what modern magicians have done with material that they got from the original D material. Okay, it's good magic, it's good anal hermetics, it'll teach you a million things simultaneously, you know, to get a good grasp of that Golden Dawn, Crowley, Liber, Hanok kind of magic. Then you have a basis for making further decisions or alterations to your operating methods when you start to turn to the original material. But there's something that there's danger. I mean, not hideous physical danger, mental danger. There's danger in stressing too much the original material, because Dee and Kelly spent 5 years bringing in a system, bringing in a workable system, the language, the calls, everything else. And a lot of that 5 years was taken up just bringing that stuff through. Mm-hmm. It would be a big mistake to say, I want to do Enochian magic just like Dee and Kelly. Okay, that's the stupidest damn thing to think in the world, because, okay, I want to spend 5 years
reinventing the wheel.
Reinventing a wheel that's already there.
Right.
So it's the tragedy is that Dee and Kelly, they didn't use the system they brought in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But there's elements of what they went through. There's elements of how they changed themselves. Okay. How bringing in this information, building this equipment and such, how it made them ready to work that magic. But the thing is, it took them 5 years. They were pissed off at each other. They, you know, Kelly was saying, they say we should swap wives. You know?
Right.
And the whole thing falls apart. In other words, they shot their human wad.
Mm-hmm.
In bringing us the system, and then didn't use the system itself. So it'd be a real, real big mistake to try to start from the beginning, as you say, reinvent the wheel. It's like they spent 5 years to get the blueprints for a Maserati, but they never built it and got in and drove it. So what we're trying to do is get in and drive the system. But what's becoming more and more clear to me as I get to be an old magical fart here is that there's a certain amount of original source material that is designed to turn you into an Enochian magician so that you can get inside that Maserati and drive. And that I've discovered, or it's been made very clear to me in just the last 3 years. And it's really the thrust of my new Enochian book is that early material, the sigillum, the holy table, the lamin that nobody talks about. You know, the Golden Dawn just acted like they, well, here's the holy table, but, I don't know, put stuff on it.
Right.
Here's the sigillum. Wow, does that look complex. And, I can sort of see the angels, but we won't work with that. You know, I think some of that preliminary material is vitally important to work its alchemy on the Enochian practitioner in order that they can be a skillful user of this marvelous system.
Now, the previous show was all about Goetic work. What do you see as the differences between Enochian and Goetic workings, and how are they similar? How should people choose to use them? What should they be doing both? Should there be emphasis on one or the other? What are your thoughts about that?
Okay. Well, I'm kind of on the extreme left wing of magical theory, in that you know, I give great respect to the original magical worldview. I see magic as an art form, and each magician is an individual artist, and so it's hard to give a blanket statement to a bunch of crazy artists, you know. But I started using Goetia before I got into an Enochian. And after I got into Enochian, I continued to use Goetic evocation from time to time. So in my career, one has not supplanted the other. They're two different art forms, and they activate, in my opinion, two very different parts of our own magical psyche. Enochian is, in my opinion, extremely clean. It's a clean universe that you prepare yourself to explore. It's the universe as is. Goetia, on the other hand, is really down and dirty. The only appropriate time, in my opinion, for a magician to use Goetia is when his or her back is completely against the wall in a particular situation of some kind.
So it's a last resort situation?
It's a last resort situation because it was meant to be a last resort situation. It works because failure is unthinkable. And so you're getting this power, this energy, from a very visceral level of your own consciousness. And when I say this, you know, Rabbi Lamed Ben Clifford says, you know, it's all in your head. You just have no idea how big your head is. Okay. When I make reference to things being inside myself, I'm not discounting the fact that it's also outside of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because in one very real way, on one very big level, there is no outside of ourselves.
Right.
Okay? Everything that even happens independently and everything outside of ourselves, if it's in our face, we're having to deal with it. So it's already in us. And does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Okay. So for Goetia, we're dealing with, let's just say we chop our soul up into those four categories of the Kabbalah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those four main categories, at least. We've got the life force way at the top, the Chai, and we've got you know, Braille, the creative level. It's our neshama, our soul intuition and stuff. And then we've got the ruach, our intellect, and then we've got the nefesh, our animal soul, mm-hmm. if you will. And please, everyone, forgive my Hebrew pronunciation. Rabbi Ben Clifford says there is no correct Hebrew pronunciation, so just give me a break. But if we were to do that, and I'm not saying this is exactly what happens, but I'm giving this just as an example. The energy that we're using, the force that we're trying to redirect, the force that we're trying to rebalance, to put into balance, to raise, to redeem, that force is way down in our nefesh, okay? It's down in the basement of our psyche, that a place where we don't want to visit, a place that we don't like to visit, a place that maybe we haven't visited in a long, long time, if ever. Okay, whatever our problem is for a Goetic evocation, the problem is something inside us that we've never, ever, ever faced before. Okay, mm-hmm. So it's like the ultimate mea culpa when you get to this nervous breakdown state of consciousness where mm-hmm. I'm in such trouble. I'm in such a bad situation here, and obviously this is something I haven't been dealing with my whole life. Whatever the problem is, it's just an endless chain of problems that started maybe from childhood or before childhood or in a previous incarnation. Whatever it is, the problem has now manifested in such a way as you're going to have a showdown with this force. And that's what a Goetic evocation is about. It's not saying that these guys are playing poker down in hell someplace, and you ring them up and they go, "Oh, I gotta go." You know, it's this guy is your problem. The demon is your problem, and you're going to have a showdown. You're either going to have to redirect this guy, or you're going to have to get rid of him. It's a down and dirty. Spiritual mafiosi movie, you know. So if you are that attached that you can whip up however you need to, the thing that you're blaming your whole problem on, and give it one last chance to help you out. And if it helps you out, by golly, you're going to take it with you all the way to nirvana yourself. But if it doesn't, it's the problem. You're going to get rid of it. If you can bring yourself emotionally to that oily, you know, infernal showdown, then you've got the key to what makes Goetia work.
Okay. Let's spend a moment and talk about your books real quick. Your latest one is the Book of Ordinary Oracles.
The Book of Ordinary Oracles. It's sort of like Lawn Light.
Lawn Light?
I spent, after 3 years of writing the Understanding Aleister Crowley's Thoth Tarot,
mm-hmm.
Which was a big project for me. It might not look like a big project when you look at it, but for me, it was serious work. And for 3 years, I was up in the middle of the night looking at those cards, and I didn't wanted to make sure that I was trying to be a good Crowley delivery system on the on the thing, you know, and didn't want to stick too much of me into it and stuff. But it was a hard and a serious project, and I really wanted to do something just fun. So it was just based on a class series that I was giving on Monday night class about how, more or less, if you really know what your question is, then your answer is screaming at you from everywhere, and any little device can attune you to hear that answer if you just, open yourself to it. So I've got the couch potato oracle, where you use remote TV and I've got the Yi Ching of Milo,
mm-hmm.
which is my version of the Wilhelm Baines made vulgar is what it is. But it's a cute little thing, and it's really what my head needed.
When I read it, I had never thought of using dominoes as a divinatory device. That was very new to me.
Dominoes really have a venerable divinatory past. I mean, it's been big in China for a long time, and thousands of years. And there's just more or less very, very traditional kind of divinatory meanings for each of the dominoes. But and so do dice. And
mm-hmm.
dominoes are just sort of, a version of dice. But I've got my...
The Oracle of Koine. Your Koine story is in there, too.
Yes.
It's very funny.
Well, it's... Koine is sort of the source of all randomly generated divinatory processes. The Yi Ching is just sort of, a very, very elaborate version of Koine. The Koine, of course, is coin. Flip a coin, flip a coin. But the idea is that you can answer a yes or no question correctly 100% of the time by flipping a coin. And it gives you an answer that's correct 100% of the time.
Your question just may not be right.
Well, the thing is, sometimes the universe is toggled one way to make heads mean yes, and sometimes it's toggled another way to make heads mean no. And you got to kind of figure out when that change occurs, and that's sort of the change in the Book of Changes, that Yi Ching sort of based on the same principle. It's not so much, it gives you three snapshots of the situation, and you're supposed to intuit the movement in those three snapshots, like a flip cartoon.
Mm-hmm. What books do you have coming out in the future? You mentioned an Enochian book earlier. What works are going to be coming out soon, and what are they called?
Yes, I'm finishing up an Enochian book that incorporates, kind of my new field theory and a lot of this original Dean Kelly material as a, an alchemical process for the magician himself or herself. And I'm just finishing up on that. The title of it, I'm not sure exactly what the title is going to end up being. It's from Weiser, but it'll have Enochian magic in the title.
Right. So. What year is that? Is it 2006? Is that
going to
come out?
That will be 2007.
Okay.
I get it to them by spring, and it should be spring 2007.
All right. Is there something coming out before that?
Yeah, there's something coming out before that, probably shortly after the first of the year, and it's called The Key to Solomon's Key, Secrets of Magic and Masonry.
Hmm.
And it's one that's less technical magic than it is an exploration of the masonry from a magical point of view, and it centers a lot on what at least masonry thinks the Templars were about. It's just revisionist history is really hard to pin down, especially. But it's more important what people believed than what actually happened. So especially when you're thinking about world, spiritual and magical movements. So I'm having a lot of fun with that one. At first, it was just going to be a small thing that focused on the person of the legendary person of Solomon as a magical archetype. You know, Solomon was, well, we're if we have to treat Solomon 100% legendary here, because history doesn't show us any Solomon. But as a character who boldly stands, takes his position in the hierarchy of spiritual forces. In other words, Solomon is kind of like an early archetype for the Thelemic magician, in that he understood his place in the cosmos and confidently plumbed the depths of you know, nasty infernal things to do good things.
Mm-hmm.
So he's the archetype of a magician that reaches down into the infernal regions and such to more or less gather up a labor force to
build a temple.
Yeah, for constructive ends. Shows a bold self perception that is more Thelemic than it is you know, what the church would always like people to think. Well, I'm a worm. I can't do. Oh, I gotta stay away from him. I can't go up. I can't go. Oh, don't go down. And Solomon is that wonderful archetype. Plus, he loved women, and he was a wild and crazy guy, and still he was a cool character.
Nothing wrong with that.
No.
Now, you also have a DVD on your website.
Yeah, that's called Kabbalah for the Rest of Us. And Kabbalah for the Rest of Us is it's a little over an hour, and it's not as slap your knee fall down funny as the Chicken Kabbalah.
Right.
But it is it's pretty well produced. It was done by a professional outfit, the people that do the Magical Egypt series. And so it would be perfect for like a lodge night, especially for people who are just being kind of introduced to the fundamentals of the Kabbalah. Also, it'd be kind of good for if you can't explain to your mother or your grandmother what you're into, you could put this on, and it probably wouldn't freak them out. But like I say, you don't have to look at it. But I'd appreciate it if you'd buy it.
Okay. If somebody wanted to get to your website, what's the address?
The address is www.lonmilo.com.
And your email address is on there, I assume.
It sure is.
Lon at Lon Milo.
Lon at Lon Milo, and they can sign up and get on my my lawn spam. Get on my mailing list. You can sign up there too. So.
Well, I really appreciate you being on the show. Your insight and background working with this material is quite extensive, and I think your knowledge really brings a lot of the praxis of this work to the listener. So thank you very much for being on the show.
Oh, John, I really appreciate the opportunity.
93.
I hope everybody's enjoyed the interview with Lon Milo Duguette today. I think it was a unique opportunity to get more in-depth exploration of Enochian. He's been on a number of radio programs before, but usually it's to a general audience, and so he doesn't get that deep into the particular mechanics of Enochian, Goetic magic, and so forth. So I think this was a great opportunity, and I hope you all have found it interesting and informative. In the next one, I'll be interviewing Keith 418 as a follow-up on his previous podcast about the Goetia. There have been a number of questions posted on the Thelema Coast to Coast website forum. There's still a little time, so if you have some questions about the Goetia, please go to the website and post on the forum, and I'll be able to ask Keith those questions when I interview him later. As I mentioned before, the outgoing song is called Liber All. It's a demo version from the group Green Man. So here's the song, and thank you all for listening, and I Hope you come back for the next podcast. Love's the law. Love under will.
Worship me with fire and blood. Worship me with swords and spears. Let the woman be girt with a sword before me. Let blood flow to my name. Trample down the heathen. Be upon them, a warrior, and I will give you their flesh to eat. Now this mystery of the letters is done, and I want to go to the holier place. With my hawk's head, I peck at the eyes of Jesus as he hangs upon the cross. I flap my wings in the face of Muhammad and blind him. With my claws, I tear out the flesh of the Indian and the Buddhist, Mongol and Dim. There is no law beyond do what thou wilt.
whole of thy world shall be the whole of the world. Love is the way, love on the way. Love is the way, love on the way. Love is the way, love on the way.